Welcome in to the Aughts and Audibles podcast. I'm Matt Preem, Eric Scopel on the show as always. And today is Monday, April 15th, middle of April, and we're a couple weeks away from the spring game. I imagine there's a lot of questions around the football program with spring game quickly approaching. Transfer portal opens up tomorrow as of this recording. So that could get interesting with Oregon, with guys maybe leaving, guys Oregon could be targeting. We'll talk about that as well. All those questions are going to be kind of addressed here in this mailbag. Eric got a good prompt out and got a lot of responses, which leads to a wide-ranging show, which is always usually, I think, our better ones when we get like a huge rush of different topics.
Yeah, this will be fun. First time we've done a mailbag pod in a minute. I think definitely the first since we've been in spring, and I just kind of wanted to get a sense of where everybody's heads were at, what they were curious on. And, you know, I'll be honest, the first half is going to be kind of some what we've seen in spring, and the second half will be, I would say, the player acquisition portion of the show. We'll talk of like Matt indicated about the portal. We might get into some recruiting talk, but we're going to start here, and I'm actually going to kind of smush two questions together here. The first being from one of our, I would say probably like our MVP question asker, Ross Maselich, who I think probably if someone was keeping track of most questions asked in the show's history, he's got to be a top three question asker. Ross asked, what comments that coaches or players have made stuck out to you thus far? Hashtag Aughts and Audibles. And I'm going to just make an executive decision to smush this question with a question from at 541 Ducks, who asked, what player has the most spring buzz? Usually seems like every year we hear about a guy or two turning heads in spring, which then tends to translate to the season. Any thoughts on who that might be? I figured we'd just kind of turn this into what we're kind of hearing from spring, what's kind of stood out. So I had three quotes that also lead me to three players that I kind of wanted to go with, which is why I'm combining these, because there were three kind of interesting quotes that I think kind of could be guys that could be candidates for the question that 541 asked. So my first one, actually, maybe, I don't know, Matt, do you have several? I'll do, maybe I do one, you do one, we can rotate. Sure. But my first one just came over the week on Saturday with, you know, spent some time talking to Coach Landing, but also met with new inside linebackers coach Brian Michalowski for the first time. And I just thought his answer to this question about Devin Jackson, I've just been thinking about it for the last couple of days. It's pretty interesting here in terms of the player he thinks Devin's becoming. First off, he says he's unbelievable physical traits. He's strong. He's extremely fast. He's the fastest player on our team, actually. Yikes, he's 230 pounds. And if that's the case, watch out. And then he said, I'm really excited about how Devin is developing right now. I'm looking forward to seeing how this competition plays out and letting the cream rise to the top. I'm curious on what he means by competition. Maybe that should have been the next follow-up question from myself or James Krepia, because we were kind of the only two media members in that scrum. Like, is he saying Devin could push Jeff or Justin to start? Right. Because if that's the conversation,
that's a huge jump.
That's a huge jump. And a guy who's like goes from being, okay, is he your third or fourth linebacker, to being maybe he's one of your top two. Now, I still fully believe Jeff's one of the guys. I expect Justin will probably win the other job, but just that he's kind of in that conversation, Matt, I don't know. It kind of stood out to me.
I wonder if it's him also maybe kind of not really acknowledging it, but at the same time kind of acknowledging that, hey, like Justin and Jeff are our two starters, and we're fighting to see who's the number three guy and letting the cream rise to the top, who becomes that number three guy. But on the flip side of that, Jamal Hill played a lot last season. He started some games, and then when Justin kind of got into full mode of healthy and in the flow of the game, Jamal kind of took a back seat but still played a bunch coming off the bench. And I wonder if, you know, coaches, you know, we had that stuff with Dan Lanning this weekend where they don't do first, second, third team, they do colors.
Yep.
I wonder if they view like the role that Jamal Hill had as kind of like starter-esque. Hey, like you're going to play starter-ish minutes. You're just not going to be listed as a starter. And I wonder if that's maybe what he's talking about, of finding that third linebacker that's going to be in the regular rotation. It doesn't really matter the down and the distance unless it's some outrageously unique situation. And finding that third guy where it just, it's a continuous rotation and, you know, the combinations are going to be rotating. Maybe that's where he's talking about for Devin Jackson. But nonetheless, like, it's a guy that's got all the physical tools.
Yeah.
And we've been just waiting for it to click on the field. Maybe it's starting to happen.
And we, I also wanted to kind of acknowledge that, yeah, Mike Lasky said his development the last 2 years, and we should note Mike Lasky's been here 2 years. He was promoted from being an analyst last year to being a full-time on-field assistant. He said it's been an unreal development for Devin. So definitely some buzz there as a player to kind of watch. And I thought, just again, it kind of applies to both questions here from Ross and from 541, where not only was this a comment that stuck in my head, but it's also a player that has clearly a lot of buzz. All right, Matt, did you have somebody that kind of jumped off?
Yeah. Your head? I was pretty – the first thing that popped in my head was when Tony Tuioti, Oregon's defensive line coach, spoke. And the very first question he was asked was, who are some guys that are getting looks at zero and at nose tackle? And the first guy he brought up makes complete sense. It was the one that you always would think about, and that's Jamari Caldwell. Then the second guy he mentioned was Amari Washington, a redshirt freshman, and someone that he said has grown. Amari Washington has grown a lot. I really like what I'm seeing from him, just being able to control A gaps, and he's so powerful and very strong. Just a rotation, those guys are in there. And then later on, he talked about Amari Washington a little bit more in depth than just his overall development. And I don't know why. Like, Amari Washington, I think, played in, what, 6 or 7 games for Oregon. I think he was able to keep his red shirt.
He didn't use a red shirt. He played, I think, 7 games. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
So he's a sophomore.
Okay. So I get confused because some guys play, like, Jerrion Dickey played 5 games but redshirted because he played in the bowl game, and the bowl game doesn't count.
Yeah.
So I couldn't remember if it was 6 for Amari Washington because he played in the championship game and the bowl game or not. Well, not. But regardless, he's a sophomore. I you know, they're expecting good things out of him, and maybe it shouldn't have been a surprise for me, but he just talked about how, like, his hands are so violent and he's a really powerful player. He's gotten bigger. And this is a position group where they only added one portal player, in the wintertime. And so at least right now, we'll see how, what they're doing in the portal tomorrow, but at least for right now, they're kind of banking on guys like Amari Washington having this step up in his evolution as a player to be a piece next season. And all accounts purposes, it sounds like it's starting to happen.
He was one of the 3 names that I had as well, Matt. And you read part of the quote I was going to read, and the other part was this one, and kind of touched on it. He says he's probably one of the most powerful guys that I've coached, yep, just in terms of being able to knock people back. That's pretty
strong statement.
Yeah, that's encouraging for sure for a guy who, again, I know he's a sophomore, but I think he played like 80, 90 snaps last year. Like, he didn't play a lot, and most of this came kind of in like end the game situations. They just wanted to get him some run. And, you know, I think even outside of these comments from Coach Tuioti, his teammates have spoken really high of him as well. People around the program have too. I just think this is going to be one of the names to know in the interior of that D-line, which was one of the questions coming in. I think he was Jared's starting nose tackle projected anyway, or like in that conversation. And I don't have his projected too deep in front of me. So it's not like this is a brand new name that's totally catches us off guard, I should say. But it's nice and encouraging to have it kind of reiterated, yes, already here early in camp. And physically, he, Jericho Johnson, Tione Gray, like, these guys I know are really young and inexperienced players, but all 3 of those guys have that size that you want to put in the middle of the defense there. And obviously, Tuioti's really fired up about what he's seen so far. I had one more. I don't know, sure, Matt, if you had another or not. I just think Kenyon Sadiq is another name. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been kind of waiting to see. I know it's not that, like, it's not like he's been here that long. We've been waiting to see some of these physical traits kind of come together. And, you know, I thought both Drew Mehringer and even Will Stein back in March, like, this is a long time ago, over a month ago now, said, like, he's a guy we've got to find ways to get him the football. Like, they're going to be able to spread him out wide, use him in the slot, use him as an inline guy. Like, I think they're just going to utilize him a little bit more and a little bit more creatively than they have a tight end in a little bit, which is kind of exciting to think about. You know, and then Terrence Ferguson, I think basically like on the first or second practice back in April, said that Sadiq is probably the best athlete on the field at all times. So that kind of a comment, the comments about Will wanting to utilize him a little more, Maringer saying he's taking another huge step as well, and especially as a blocker and as an understanding of, because kind of like Devin Jackson, both Devin Jackson and Kenyon Sadiq basically are entering positions that, it's not that Devin didn't play linebacker, but as he said in the interview, and there's a full story up on DuckTerritory.com that I'd suggest you, if you wanted to learn a little bit more, you can go read. But said, like, he had to learn so much, basically. He had to strip it back to the bolts, basically, when he got here. So for both Sadiq and Jackson in their short time at Oregon, they've kind of had to learn their position. And it sounds like they've both kind of gotten to that place. And these are two freakish athletes for their size. Like, if Devin is the fastest player on this team, Sadiq is, I think, one of the top five or 10 guys. I think he even said that in the interview. So it's encouraging to see, I think, those two guys I kind of grouped together as freakish athletes. We knew we were fired up about what they had from athletic profiles when they came in. And now it sort of sounds like this spring, it's starting to kind of come together. And neither of them are going to start, I don't think. But these are two guys that could be really crucial bench pieces in 24. And then in 25, it wouldn't be a surprise to me at all if these guys have breakout seasons and are all conference caliber players, because that's the type of recruits they were when they came in.
We might see very little of this one in the 2024 football season, but I think it was still notable and it needs to be discussed. Junior Adams was talking with us, I think it was Tuesday of last week, and somebody asked him, what have you seen from Kyler Casper? And what really stuck in my head was, he said, I'm glad you asked about that, because Kyler's made big strides this offseason. Like, coaches typically aren't going to go out of their way to just praise heap on a player unannounced in the media. But there are guys that, like, they probably want to be asked about. And that's kind of the scenario I felt how that played out with Junior Adams, Oregon's receivers coach, and Kyler Casper, a redshirt sophomore this coming fall. A guy that enrolled early, and quite honestly, I would admit, like, you saw him as a true freshman in 2022, and you were kind of like, why did you enroll early? Like, you started your clock 1 year early, and I know you're going to be in the training program, and you're going to have the food and the coaching and all that, but it felt like the year, you know, starting the year 1 year earlier just wasn't worth the trade-off. And then as a redshirt freshman, he played 12 of 14 games for Oregon. He had two catches, but just for 1 yard. I think he had a game where he had a loss of yardage. He's played in 15 career games, but Junior Adams said, you know, where you see that growth is in two areas. One has been just the playbook, understanding and what we're doing and where we're going. And two, you can see, and this is the biggest one, and two, you can see the weight room is paying off. You can see his strength. He's running a little bit better. He's running a little bit stronger, a little bit more grounded on the catch, stronger at the point of contact in the run game. And he's taken the next step as far as what he's doing in the classroom. So I don't anticipate Kyler Casper being a guy that cracks the top four for Oregon in the receiver position group, but maybe his development forces Junior Adams to expand that rotation of four to five guys during the course of majority of the game to maybe six to seven guys. And maybe Kyler Casper is going to be one of those guys that forces his way onto the field in some capacity. I think it's notable. I mean, this is a guy that highly regarded recruit, came early, and struggled's not the right word, but he wasn't good enough to play as a true freshman. And maybe it's starting to look like he's getting himself ready and his development starting to put himself in a position where he could play a little bit more, a bigger role in 2024.
We should note, we did actually get to watch fastball in practice, which is 11.
He had an unbelievable 11. Catch.
And I was going to say, Kyler had a catch in basically double coverage that he pulled down through, I think Dante Manning was on him, and they had a safety coming. I couldn't tell you who the other player was, but it's a great ball by Dylan Gabriel.
Yep.
And we should also note, so people don't get confused, because we've been told not to get it twisted. This was not a first team offense. This was not Dylan and Kyler's working with the first team. This was, I think, Team Yellow. They had separated by color. But regardless, a great throw and catch, and Kyler made a really tough catch in traffic. So that's definitely a good one. And then I guess just to round it out, because I think we have to acknowledge, like, Jurion Dickey's another name everybody's really fired up about Jurion. I feel like we almost have Jurion fatigue because we've talked about him so much since last fall in terms of being that breakout guy. But everything we've heard this spring, and in fact, Matt, you had a story up on the site that came out, I think, Sunday morning, talking about this and kind of discussing his spring. But another guy, it just sounds like the pieces are coming together. And I think that's the encouraging thing of, like, all the names we've mentioned are guys that were recruited here. They're either in their second, maybe their third year, and it's starting to click. So I think you're pretty encouraged by, especially, the guys that have been here. This is their third year, Kyler, Devin, players that everybody's kind of like, are we going to see it come together? Well, at least there's some signs in spring that maybe we're starting to get close to that.
Just to touch on Jurion real quick, I think he noticeably looked different in the bowl practices ahead of the Fiesta Bowl. And from a physical standpoint, and also just from, like, a healthy standpoint, he was moving around on the field much better than he was when he first arrived. He was hurt when he first arrived, rehabbing from his injury. And I think he's taken another step of, like, he looks like a different player this spring than he did during bowl prep. And I think that's a really positive step for his development. And like Kyler Casper, maybe he forces his way into the rotation. We'll see.
Do you have anybody else, Matt?
I think I was going to notably just say, like, there's a lot of praise about Dylan Gabriel, which shouldn't be a surprise, but it's kind of one of those things you just want to be reaffirmed of hearing, and, like, the leadership traits. I was pretty impressed when he spoke with us a couple weeks or a week or so ago with the media. Like, very similar with Bo, very courteous, very polite, very smart, his very media savvy, knows how to answer questions, gave coach answers to some stuff, but it also opened up on some other things, which I thought was pretty cool. I was just overall impressed with him and why he was a fan favorite at UCF and why he was a fan favorite at Oklahoma. It's probably going to be the same reasons here.
Yeah, he's very composed. Definitely won the press conference last week. Everything players have said about him and how easy it is to connect with him, you can kind of see it. He's just, like, really self-assured and confident and poised, and just kind of talks and carries himself like a leader, which is what you want from your quarterback. And I know, again, one 15-minute exchange with him isn't everything, but you just kind of came away going, okay, he's very cool, calm, and collected in a scrum. I'm sure when the bullets are really flying in a football game and it's actually stressful for him, it's the same sort of thing. And I just had one other player that just kind of popped to my mind right here. Kobe Savage said Aaron Flowers, the true freshman safety, has picked up the playbook, and he kind of paused. I don't know if he knew to what degree he wanted to praise him, and I couldn't tell if he was going to say, like, he's ever seen, but he just said, faster than most probably could. So, there's kind of some conversation going into spring about what that safety rotation might look like. And I thought it was notable Kobe pointed him out and how quickly he's learned the playbook, and also kind of named him as one of the two or three guys that have challenged the most in that safety room. So one of the true freshmen, at least, was, I thought I wanted to note. And I thought he's obviously having a pretty darn strong spring. All right, let's do the third question here before we hit a break. This one comes from at Duck Fan Dan. Who do you think will make the most impact in the spring game? Transfer players or young players who have been developing? Hashtag Otson Audibles. Thank you very much for the question, Dan. I don't know how many you've asked, but it's always good to see some new names in here. Off the top of the head, it felt like transfers is like a no-brainer question, because you got both quarterbacks. You've got Evan Stewart, who everybody's fired up to see. Defensively, that could be three or four, defensive backs that are going to pop. I think Jamari Caldwell could have been a player we named earlier in that kind of who's got the most buzz, just because everybody who talks about Jamari seems like really fired up about him. So I'll go with transfers. But, it was interesting. The more we talked about some of these young developing players, and there are even more, you know, off the top of my head, I could mention. Like, there's so many, there's a lot to be excited about from the spring game, right? Like, there's probably half a dozen transfers I'm excited to see, and half a dozen, you know, second or third year guys who are kind of been working their way up that I'm excited to see. You know, so I go transfer because quarterback right there. I mean, I think we have to know what they have there. Everybody's obviously very, very confident about it, but we need to see it, right? Like we were just talking about with Dylan, we've got kind of affirmation, or it was reaffirmed the type of, you know, person he is and how he carries himself in that scrum, but we haven't seen him do a whole lot at Oregon yet. And we need to kind of go through the spring to get a feel for what he can do, to get our first glimpse of Dante Manning. So I think just quarterback alone, I'd go transfers. If it were to take out the quarterback stuff, I might go the rest of it, because whether it's Amari Washington on the defensive line or Mekhi'l Gardner, who we should note, Tuioti also had some really nice things to say about, or Terrence Green, who he kind of highlighted. There's just a bunch of young defensive players who've been here for a year or two that I'm excited to see. And we mentioned a couple of those receivers earlier with Kyler, with Jurion. So, you know, you could kind of go either way. I think quarterback, you know, because of the value there and the fact that you've got two of them, that's going to be where I'm most focused. But there's a lot of things to look out for on the spring game.
I mean, think about I just went through the depth chart. There are 9 transfer guys that, like, I figure are going to have pretty prominent roles. They're going to be in the 2-deep if not starting this season. Jabbar Muhammad and Cam Alexander at cornerback. You've also got Jamari Caldwell at defensive tackle, nose tackle, defensive line, whatever we want to call him. Matthew Bedford is at right guard. And then you've got Evan Stewart at receiver. And then Dylan Gabriel and Dante Moore and Jay Harris. Or Dylan Gabriel, Dante Moore at quarterback, and Jay Harris at running back. Like, I'm really excited.
You forgot Kobe Savage, sorry.
Oh, yes. Yes, Kobe Savage too. Sorry. So, I'm really intrigued to see Jay Harris. I'm really intrigued. I know Dylan Gabriel is going to be really good. It's going to be fun to see him in the Oregon uniform for the first time. But, like, we kind of already know, like, what he's going to bring. But what about Dante Moore? Like, how close to Dylan Gabriel is Dante Moore going to be? How big of a gap is QB1 to QB2 going to be? And then, I guess, how big of a gap is QB2 to whoever that is, to whoever else below them? Because Novosad's here, Moga's here.
Yeah.
You know, those three guys are going to be duking it out. But then you've also got, like, Daylon Austin and Roderick Pleasant, two guys that played quite a bit. Daylon Austin was able to keep his red shirt. Roderick Pleasant played just over the threshold. You've also got, like you talked about, you know, some defensive linemen. Mekhi'l Gardner is someone that Tony Tuioti gave a shout-out to. Terrence Green is another guy that got a shout-out, you know, from. Amari Washington, obviously. So, like, I don't know. I think this is like one of your choose your own adventure type books where you could go down the path of veteran and see what life is like with these guys at their new spots. You also could go and find a lot of storylines, intriguing ones, of young guys waiting to showcase what they've improved over their first year at Oregon or year and a half.
It would be interesting to, like, select 5 transfers and 5 developing guys for this game and, like, map out who had, I know it's not a fair way of really identifying the answer to this question, but, like, just, like, here's 5 guys that we're really excited about who are transfers. Here's 5 guys we're really excited about who are returners that are maybe not proven, haven't been starters. And just to map out and, like, who has the most wow moments, who has maybe, I mean, counting stats are kind of take it or leave it for a game like this, 'cause you just don't know how it's going to go. But, it would be kind of interesting to come out and say, like, oh, yeah, maybe the returning guys did have the better day, actually. But, no, I think this is a good question because I think on face value, when I first looked at it, I'm like, well, it's obviously the transfers because of the quarterbacks. But then you talk out all these young guys that you're excited to see, and because the recruiting has been so good the last couple of cycles and the top-tier talent on the roster has also been good, there's just a bunch of guys that were, you know, top 100, top, you know, 150 recruits who, like, haven't played here, who we're going to get a chance maybe on April 27th to really see for the first time.
What are we more excited to see? Dylan Gabriel and Dante Moore combination.
Yeah.
Or just Dylan Gresham, Ryan Pelham, Jeremiah McClellan, Jurrion Dickey, and Kyler Casper.
I want to see the quarterbacks. But the other guys are going to tell part of that story for the quarterbacks too. So, I mean, if you think about it, just the passing game in general is going to be all sorts of newness and fun stuff. Like, it's going to be – I bet you – I hadn't thought about this. I bet you half of the pass attempts are attempted or targeting a new player who has not been with the team before.
Probably.
Well, obviously, more than half are going to be from a quarterback perspective, but like just in terms of pass catchers, it's going to be a lot of that.
I don't think we see a ton of Tez. I don't think we see, we'll see a little bit of Dylan, I think. But I really think a lot of, we'll probably see a little bit of Trayshon. But I think a lot of this is going to be about getting Evan Stewart into speed and more so seeing what these young guys can do. And can they perform at a high level to push themselves into that next tier of a position group? Whether it's cornerback like a Dalen Austin, Dakota Fields, Roderick Pleasant, Solomon Davis, or you know, can they push their way up with Jaleel Florence, Jabbar Muhammad, Cam Alexander, Dante Manning,
Nico Reed.
Yeah, like that type of a group, or are they going to be back down one group lower again? I'm really excited to see Kingston Lopa as a true freshman. Mm. Like 6'4", a dude that you look at and say, like, that guy could grow into a linebacker. And then you say that to Chris Hampton. He's like, no. We're keeping him at safety. Like, they really want him there. That could be interesting to see as well.
You know, and I guess just to round out our conversation here, like, and I know the spring game is still a ways away. We'll do, I'm sure, a full preview pod or two the week of the game. But LaPonchio development, like, this is a guy who we've seen more than the other names you've mentioned. But this is somebody who's going to be really integral to the season's success. Like, if he ends up being their starting center, which all indications remain that that'll be the case. I think everybody's still really excited and high on him. But like, what does he look like in the spring game actually being the guy? I know he was that in the Fiesta Bowl, but this is his job now. And I think that's going to be another one of those returning, developing players. Again, he's only a second-year guy, like the guys we're talking about. We just have been kind of talking about him in a different light because he's already started a game. And I think everybody kind of anticipates he'll start every game this season. That's another one to certainly be keeping an eye out. So a lot of good choices for both categories. Good question from
100%. We could make a draft of like veterans against
new. That's what I was saying. Yeah.
And who has the better outcome. You know, that could be fun to watch. We should do that.
Maybe we'll get the three of us on. We'll do a three-person draft here and just see who has the best roster.
Yeah, let's do that. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, we'll dive into the second half of this episode. All right, welcome back to the Odds and Audibles podcast. A couple questions in, a couple more to go.
Yeah, we're going to be transitioning from kind of spring stuff to more player acquisition. This question from, I call him another MVP candidate from our question askers. That's at Robbie Parnes. He's asked a ton of questions here. Thank you, Robbie, for again being involved in the show. He asks, which 2025 recruits do you expect Coach Samples to have a big impact in trying to land? Names to watch at running back, receiver, players from Texas, and others. Hashtag Odds and Audibles is a good question from Robbie. We spoke a little bit. What was that, last Wednesday or so when we spoke? Yeah. The two of us talked, kind of broke down the Rashad Samples hiring. And I think it's an interesting question because as Robbie kind of indicates here, this is a guy who will be Oregon's running backs coach, who's previously as like a week ago, was a college receivers coach. And he has all of these ties to the state of Texas. So I don't expect it to be a fully exhaustive list here, Matt, but who are kind of maybe two or three names that you can kind of throw out here that you think Oregon will maybe have a little better shots with now that Samples is here?
Well, the first one's Cooper Perry. I mean, and he already committed to Oregon.
Yes.
Shortly after Samples is hired. I think Oregon was already trending in that that direction. They were already trending in that direction to get a verbal commitment from Cooper Perry. But it certainly only helped strengthen Oregon's chances there. He recruited Cooper Perry at ASU. Perry's a local kid. So we'll, you know, that's one right there. I think the obvious, the biggest one is DeCorian Moore, the five-star receiver, the number one player at the position in the 2025 recruiting class. He's from Texas. Samples' dad is the head coach for DeCorian Moore at the high school level. So I think that factors in there a little bit. Marcus Harris is another receiver that Oregon likes from Southern California. ASU offered him. Oregon's in the top five already there. He's from Southern California, like I said. So, like, I think that's one where, you know, there's a previous relationship with Harris. There's a previous, you know, Oregon already had a good place, and now, you know, they bring in a name that he's familiar with. That should help. Deshaun Brame is a tight end from Kansas. Samples was recruiting Brame to ASU. How realistic of a chance that they had, who knows? But that was a player that ASU tried, and that's the player that Samples was recruiting, involved in. And Oregon is a player. They are one of the better players. And, you know, Dan Lanning talked a lot about how Samples is a relationship guy. He seems to find a way to relate to everybody. We haven't heard from, obviously, Brame himself talking about Samples, but I would wager, like, ASU wasn't really heavily involved because of where their program is at from a stature standpoint, not because of a poor relationship with Samples.
Right.
You look at the schools Brame's looking at, and ASU just isn't there. You know, they're not on par with the other schools. So that's one that I would, you know, that's another one I would look at. And then I think you look across the state of Texas, and basically anyone that Oregon's in a good position with, or seems to be trending in the, you know, as one of the major players, like, this is going to help, whether that's a Michael Terry the third, who's an athlete from San Antonio, not the same area as, you know, the Houston, the Dallas area. But nonetheless, like, it's a Texas guy. You look along the offensive line, and Michael Fasusi, another elite offensive tackle, a top 40 prospect. Like, Oregon's bringing in a guy with deep Texas ties. That guy's from Texas. I think Oregon will probably land one or two extra players from the state of Texas because of the Sample hire. It wouldn't surprise me if they are able to, you know, maybe pull in a Brame or pull in a Harris as well. Maybe a flip of DeCorian Moore will happen. They were already a player there. To be a potential flip candidate before Samples hired. Now they've got a really good, you know, connection there. That's kind of where you want to look if you're looking for guys that he could be tied to in the 2025 class. And honestly, like, this list could get bigger, and it could drastically improve when eval period happens and he's able to hit the road.
Sure.
And go and see kids. And as more prospects start coming into Eugene for official visits and unofficial visits, spring game's always a big recruiting weekend. Wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if, you know, a lot of guys that he's going to be targeting or is currently targeting swing through, and we'll see what happens there too. So the next couple of weeks, we'll get a better idea.
I think it's going to be important to track Oregon's recruiting success on the offensive side of the ball in the state of Texas. And, like, if they don't have success, I don't want to say it's cause for concern, but I'd just be surprised if every year if they're not pulling one or two pretty highly regarded guys. Because you look at the way the staff is set up now, their offensive coordinator and quarterbacks coach, Will Stein, he's had a ton of experience in Texas. Obviously, he's from Louisville originally, but he's coached high school level. He's coached as a, you know, a GA at the University of Texas. He was at UTSA before he was here. Drew Mehringer, same thing. A lot of ties to Texas. Also coached at the University of Texas. He's already kind of had some success, you know, recruiting that area. So, like, those two with Samples, you're just kind of going, like, Oregon has a lot more ties to the state, just, like, straight up than they've had in the past here. And that's an awfully good state to have a pipeline to, or at least the connection to, because if you can get, again, even if it's just like one or two, let's just call them top 247 recruits, so four-star recruits, basically, each cycle coming from Texas, you're probably improving your roster every year just because of the talent that comes out of there. Even if you're not getting the DeCorion Moore, who's like, you know, the uber top recruit, even if it's a tier down and kind of one of those four-star guys, you're still getting somebody who can be a contributor. And I think Oregon should, you know, based on the way their staff is kind of composed right now, should do very well in the Lone Star State. I wouldn't be surprised to start seeing that as soon as 25, where they've had a lot of success there recently, but I think it could get even bigger. All right. Fifth and final question from at Bigfoot Actual. Love that name. With the chaos of spring portal coming, what positions do you expect to see the most movement in or out from? Hashtag OtsNotables. And I should note, he's kind of asking for an answer for both. So I'm going to guess our answers to in are pretty similar, Matt, but I'll just start with defensive line would be where, if they are going to add somebody, because you look at the rest of the roster, man, like they're deep and pretty ready to go. And like we spent a lot of time with this pod talking about Amari Washington, you know, Mekhi Gardner, some of those guys. Like, I'm not saying that there's not the talent here. But if Oregon is to add somebody, you're like, who knows? Maybe they won't add anybody. Maybe they'll just stand pat. I mean, that kind of hasn't been the Dan Lanning way of going. And I know there's a lot of talk. There's going to be a ton more movement, you know, this post spring than there were in past years. So maybe there'll be enough that they'll be more aggressive than I'm thinking, but I can't imagine they take more than four players after this, just because of the numbers game they're in. And if they are going to take them, you know, not that that number might even be high. If they are going to take them, I just look at the defensive line where I think I predicted like they'd take three or four maybe before the portal opened back in December. They've only taken one. It was Jamari Caldwell, who, again, everybody's been raving about. Sounds like that was a real big hit. If they're going to take another spot, maybe it's there, because I just don't look around the roster and find many other places that make like much of any sense. Like, I don't know, maybe safety, but even there, I'm like, they've got a ton of bodies. It's just not clear how it all comes together. I don't know. Did you have anything else that stood out there, Matt?
I think in and out is going to be the defensive line. They have four players on its roster that plays defensive end, nose tackle, or defensive tackle that has played more than one full season of college football. Amari Washington is going to be a sophomore in 2024, but he just completed his first year of being on campus at Oregon. You have at defensive end, it's defensive tackle type role. Like, you have two true freshmen, nose tackle. You have a redshirt sophomore in Ben Roberts, who's fighting with Amari Washington. And then behind them, you have Tione Gray, a true freshman. Defensive tackle, Keon Ware Hudson could probably be projected as maybe a starter. I don't know, maybe. He's in the two deep. He's a senior. And then everyone behind him on that side, Johnny Bowens, Terrence Green, Mekhi Gardner. You want to look at maybe like a Jericho Johnson if he fits that role. All redshirt freshmen or a true freshman. So, like, I have a hard – like, just like what you said, like, I have a hard time thinking Dan Lanning is going to go into the Big Ten where, like, go back to what Jeffrey Bossa said about his desire to come back to Oregon. Hey, we're playing in the Big Ten. It's an opportunity for me to showcase that I'm a really good run-stopping linebacker. And, you know, if Bossa is aware of that and the offenses that they're going to face, like, it just feels really out of character, or maybe it's a gamble that they're willing to take because they've got confidence in their young guys, but it just seems very, very odd that they would be going into the Big Ten with just four players who have basically real experience playing college football in games. You know, like, maybe we round that number up to five with Amari Washington because he played in six or seven games last season. But, like, a bunch of true freshmen, a bunch of redshirt freshmen that really didn't get into big games last season, that's going to be a big step. And you're banking on the fact that Caldwell, Birch, Washington, Roberts, and Ware Hudson they don't get hurt at all. And they're playing the most violent position in the sport where the contact is the most frequent. Like, that just seems like if they're going to add a player, that feels like the one that's going to be added at.
You know, and to your point, you're banking on those players not getting hurt. And the other part you're clearly banking on is development.
Yeah.
Because you're going to have, as you've kind of said numerous times, 3 to 4 players develop from that group that you kind of run through there of your of guys that haven't really played at this level. And that's, to your point earlier, it's kind of a risk. Like, there is a bit of a, you know, is this a moment where we see Dan kind of roll the dice and say, I really like the ceiling of what all of these young defensive linemen can be, and we might take some lumps early in Big Ten play. We're going to feel comfortable doing that because we don't want to lose these guys, but it's going to be a little more difficult. Or is he going to say, let's just go get a guy or two who can come in and immediately be a huge difference maker, even though that might scare off, to your point earlier about out transfers, that might scare off a guy or two who we still think the world of and have high hopes for, but who we simply won't be able to keep a hold on because they're not going to want to sit for 2 years before they play. So I agree. That's the interesting kind of gamble there. And I'll be very curious to see how the portal plays out. I had two other positions on the moving out that would make sense to me. I think the really obvious one is corner. I mean, they've got like 5 or 6 guys that could, in theory, like 5 off the top of my head who are guys who've started at this level before, right? Jabbar Muhammad and Cam Alexander, the transfers. Julio Florence was basically a full-time starter last year when he was healthy. Dante Manning has like double-digit career starts as a fill-in in his career. Nico Reed was a full-time starter at Colorado. And actually, like, you go back and watch the games he filled in as a starter last year, I thought he was pretty darn good, actually. I thought he was better when he was outside than when he was kind of as a slot corner. Like, you could
have dudes.
Like, one of those guys might just take off, right? Like, it's not totally outside the realm of possibility that you get through spring and you can't convince all 5 of those guys to stay. And you're not in a bad spot either way, because even if you lose one of those 5, you still got a great 2 deep. And that doesn't even include the 2 redshirt, or I guess 3 kind of second-year freshmen with Solomon Davis, who might be a candidate to transfer to. Maybe he just doesn't see the path, because we're talking about it. He's pretty far down there. Roderick Pleasant, Dalen Austin. And then you've got your true freshman and Sione Lalea, the top JUCO. I mean, there's so many corners here that I just look at that and go, somebody – or maybe 2 guys from this group. Maybe it's one of the guys that I mentioned earlier in that top 5 that decides, hey, I want to go start. I'm not going to do it here. One of those guys takes off. And maybe it's one of these, whether it be a Solomon Davis or whether it be a – it seems like everybody's really high on Dalen Austin and Roger Pleasant. But just feels like that's a group where Oregon has so much depth that maybe they lose one. And then the other position I kind of noted here, I feel sort of similarly, is receiver. Where,
I was just going to say that. Receiver, right? Is the one.
It's kind of the mirror on offense of corner, where you've got a core of guys. You're like, there's 4 guys that are for sure starting caliber, right? And that'd be the 3 that return, and Trayshawn and Gary and Tez, and then obviously Evan Stewart. And it's like, you got those 4 guys, and then we're hearing all these great things about Jurion, all these great things about Kyler. Like, is just Justice Lowe look to transfer? This would be his 3rd season of kind of not being an impact player. I don't know. So those were the 2 other ones I just wanted to throw out there from a departing transfers that would make sense.
Yeah, I was just going to bring up receiver like you did for corner. Like, there's a lot of experience and there's also a lot of youth. And it also wouldn't surprise me in the slightest. Like, and look, we're all speculating here when we bring up names. Like, we're not
trying to make that clear.
Yeah, we're not trying to say we're hearing these guys are leaving. We're just speculating, and we're using the players' names as an example. But like, Gary Bryant, like, what if he looks around and goes, like, I need to put film on tape, and I need like 2 years of it. And last year in 2023, like, I started almost every game, but like, I was the 3rd or 4th most targeted guy on the team. I wasn't getting the top 2 targets. I need to go somewhere where I can get top 2 targets, and I have to wait a next year for that to happen here. And who knows if it's even going to be a reality? Like,
yeah,
maybe. We've seen stranger things. Like, we've literally seen guys that start leave. That would be one where I'm like, hey, like, it would surprise me a little bit. I don't think he's going to leave, but strange things have happened in the portal. And, you know, guys guys need to put stuff on tape. Maybe he wants a bigger role. That wouldn't surprise me in the slightest, too, if we see an upperclassman look around and go, like, I love it here, but I'm only going to get about 20 reps a game, and I was hoping to get 35 or 40 reps a game. I don't know how realistic that would be, but, you know, you just look around the room and just, like, at corner and go, there's a lot of guys here. So it wouldn't surprise me there, too. And then real briefly, like, it wouldn't surprise me either if we see offensive linemen.
Yeah, they've got guys.
Move around, too. Like, they brought in Matthew Bedford at right guard, and there's a couple guys on the team that play the guard position that are upperclassmen that maybe would look at that and say, like, well, like, it's clear that they over-recruited me, and maybe, you know, if I want to play and I want to roll bigger here, bigger than what I have here, I need to leave. So that wouldn't surprise me either.
I mean, again, we're playing the name game here, and I, as Matt said, I'll just reiterate, this is not reporting anything. This is just us trying to kind of come up with some names. Like, Nashad Strother would be a very logical departure just because he was brought in from East Carolina last offseason. He'd started the previous 2 years there and was actually a pretty darn good player. Didn't start or play very much last year. And if Bedford comes in and is immediately the starter, if you're Nashad, you're going like, WTF, I got to find somewhere I'm going to play. I was a starter for 2 years. Now I'm going to go a place and sit 2 years. Like, that just doesn't make a lot of sense. This is George Silva's last year of eligibility, I think. And he was the number one rated offensive tackle as a junior college player last cycle. He might look around and go, I'm not going to beat out a Johnny. I'm not going to beat out Josh. He's currently basically Josh's backup left tackle. Like, why don't I go down a level and give myself an opportunity to start and play some? Or maybe I use a redshirt year and then come back and I can have one of these starting spots in 25. And then the third name would just be Dave Iuli, because I continue to hear he's really good. And I continue to look up at the depth chart and not see a starting spot for him. And this would be year three. So if you're Dave Iuli, are you really going to be entering your senior season in 2025 with as a possible one-year starter? Or do you want to go somewhere else? So, again, we're just kind of talking it through. These are names. But important to have some of this context, I think, before people are maybe surprised as we get into this next week here. Like, this is going to be a big week for our practice axis of going out there and being like, who's here? Who's not here? Because it stops becoming, oh, they're not here because they're hurt. And it becomes maybe they're not here because they're transferring. So there is kind of a little bit of a different dynamic that we're going to start seeing here over the next, or I guess the final half of spring practice.
All right. That's going to do it for us here on the Odds and Audibles podcast. Thank you for submitting your questions. Much greatly appreciated. And thank you for listening to today's show. We'll be back later this week with another podcast, potentially talking about Tony Stubblefield on the basketball side, getting up, maybe discuss some things from a portal standpoint for both teams. And then on Friday, maybe we'll bring in a guest. We're trying to lock one in there as well. But until then, you've been listening to the Odds and Audibles podcast.
Talk to you later, folks.